Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special online event today. It's called Discovering the Way of the Psychonaut, How to Access the Power of Non-Ordinary States of Consciousness. My name is Stephen Dynan. I'm the founder and CEO of The Shift Network, and I'm really thrilled to be hosting today's program because we get to spend an hour with one of the truly most influential, brilliant, and really groundbreaking minds of our time. His name is Stan Grof. He's an internationally renowned psychiatrist and one of the founders of the field of transpersonal psychology. Stan has done over 50 years of research into the use of non-ordinary states of consciousness for exploration, healing, and growth and insights in the human psyche. He's authored many books from the Psychology of the Future, LSD Psychotherapy, Beyond the Brain, The Cosmic Game. It goes on and on. Many scholarly articles and had a huge impact on the whole evolution of the field of psychology and psychiatry. So thank you, Stan, so much for your life work and for joining us here today.
Well, thank you very much, Stephen, for you have been doing for spreading the information about new paradigm, about consciousness research, transpersonal psychology, and also for introducing my work. I really appreciate the teleseminar that we just ended.
Yeah, we had a very exciting...
From South America, and I got already feedback from people. It was known there, you know.
Oh, that's great. Well, we were very excited. We had over 500 people in that program, so the response has been tremendous. So I want to just say up front to folks who are joining us that we're going to have this hour with Stan, and this is also a preview of coming attractions as well. We're going to have an entire new 24-week program that's a first of its kind with Stan on the internet. It's called The Way of the Psychonaut, an advanced program for exploring transpersonal realms. It's really going to allow you to go much deeper into the material and experiential domains that go beyond traditional psychology. So very exciting, and we'll share a bit about that towards the end. So Stan, maybe we start with a bit about your own journey. Yeah, so you went from a more conventional psychiatric background and became quite an explorer of these further reaches. Maybe just a glimpse into that early transition for yourself and how that seeded a whole different path for your career.
Well, I went to study medicine specifically with the goal of becoming a psychoanalyst. I was very excited about Freud and his followers, and, you know, the light that they seem to be throwing into very obscure areas, like from interpretation of dreams to the origins of psychoneurosis in childhood and so on. So I studied medicine, and I volunteered as a student at the psychiatric department, and then did the psychiatric residence. And as I was getting into psychiatry, I was becoming disenchanted with psychoanalysis. At first, it was the practice of psychoanalysis, you know, how long it takes, how much time, energy, money, and so on. I was still very excited about the theory. And at the time when I was getting kind of cold feet about psychoanalysis, I had the opportunity of volunteering for an LSD session. And that one day really changed my professional life, my personal life, and, you know, sent me in a completely new direction. Big excitement of this non-ordinary states of consciousness that kind of became my, passion, profession, and vocation.
Beautiful. Let's talk about the power of non-ordinary states. What is it about non-ordinary states and exploration that you think really opens up accelerated evolution for human beings?
Well, I think this is a possibility of... not only personal healing, but something that has tremendous implications, I believe, for the future of humanity, because people can undergo transformation that involves an entirely new worldview, a new hierarchy of values, new strategy of life. For example, you don't have to teach people ecology when they have transpersonal experiences and identify with other species and realize the deep embeddedness of in nature that we have, people become, you know, very, very determined fighters for clean air, clean water, clean soil in which we are growing food. They also develop a sense of being global citizens before they are citizens of any particular country. What you can also see is development of very, very strong conviction that violence is not an acceptable way of solving problems and conflicts. So you don't have to teach people about these things. As they are clearing their own unconscious, both, you know, personal and whatever comes from the transpersonal domains, this kind of worldview emerges quite spontaneously. Mm-hmm. So it makes a difference in people's personal life, but I believe that if it's done on a large scale, it could also have global implications.
Let's talk about some of these realms that get disclosed. I mean, you've done more work than perhaps anybody to map the transpersonal domains, and what are these higher realms of consciousness that that open up as we let go of the skin-encapsulated ego?
I just realized a couple of months ago that it's now 50 years that I first presented the concept of the perinatal matrices and the fact that there is a powerful record of biological birth in the psyche, and it didn't seem to influence thinking in the professional circles. They still are using a kind of a postnatal map of the psyche, you know, based on Freud's statements that the newborn is a tabula rasa. And then also there was no reaction to Jung's discovery of the collective unconscious, both in the historical and in the archetypal domain. So we have very, very sort of superficial, very narrow model of the psyche, which makes it impossible to really understand what emotional problems are, what psychosomatic problems are, and we don't have very effective ways of treating people. You know, much of psychiatric therapy is now turning into symptomatic suppression. There's no tendency to go for the deeper sources where emotional problems are coming from. And this is not possible without expanding the cartography and include the perinatal, the memory of birth, and then also the collective unconscious, the transpersonal domain.
So one of the concepts you've often brought forward in your work, which I've always appreciated, is this idea of a coex. So that oftentimes when we have an issue in the present, then there's these layer cake. It's like a layer cake underneath of older influences. Maybe share a little bit more about that.
So the expanded cartography that I had to create in order to account for what was happening in first in psychedelic sessions and then in holotropic breathwork has three domains. One is the recollective biographical, the second one the perinatal, the record of birth, and then the third the transpersonal. So the biographical domain, this new map really shares with traditional psychology and psychiatry, but there were two major additions to the biographical domain. One was the concept of the coexistence that you're asking about. I found out that the traumatic memories from postnatal life are not stored in the unconscious in the form of a kind of disconnected mosaic of individual events, but that they form certain dynamic constellations, multi-level constellations, where you find traumatic experiences from different periods of life that share certain elements, specific emotions or specific physical feelings, for example, pain or choking and so on. And they play an extremely important role in feeding energy into symptoms that people suffer from. And then I have even found that the coexistence go deeper, that depending on the nature of the trauma which is involved, they would be also anchored in one of the perinatal matrices, which means experiences that are associated with the reliving of consecutive stages of birth. And even deeper, then there are roots that go into the transpersonal, let's say into the karmic realm, into the archetypal realm, into the phylogenetic realm. So these are very, very interesting dynamic constellations in the psyche. And Rick and I, in the last 30 years, found out that they're also systematically correlated with astrological archetypes, which means that people would have experiences of these coex systems when they have transits which reflect somehow the emotional and the physical quality of the coex system. It's an extremely useful concept for doing any kind of deep inner work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it also speaks to why the non-ordinary state work is so important, because it's very difficult to get at these deeper layers with any other means. Talk-based therapy is really going to only be skimming those surface-most layers.
Yeah. Well, you know, the verbal therapy is very, very limited. And particularly when you are dealing with things like, very extreme emotions of fear and violence, and especially severe psychosomatic problems like psychogenic asthma and so on, or psychosomatic pains that don't have any organic basis, then there's always a contribution of the perinatal element and even deeper roots that go into the transpersonal domain. And there's no way of reaching that by verbal therapy, by free associations, interpretations, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about why it's important also that, like, the difference between having insight into the root of issues versus the kind of experiential release, and how something like holotropic breathwork, which I've facilitated for many years, is more effective at actually releasing the constellated patterns and energies underneath.
Well, it's, simply the roots are going deeper. So it's really important to use methods that can reach those levels. And it will not be, it will not be talking. It has to be holotropic breathwork. It has to be some shamanic method, psychedelic sessions. Basically, powerful experiential approaches.
Mm-hmm. And what is it about those powerful experiential approaches that really helps to catalyze a deeper transformation? I mean, this is getting into where we're talking about the way of the psychonaut. So the psychonaut, in many ways, is defined by not just having insight into things, but actually going into this terrain and doing much deeper level of experiential work.
Well, it's not that the insights, don't mean anything, but they are not enough to bring any significant changes.
Mm-hmm.
For example, to give you something specific to think about, many people find that the deepest roots of their negative feelings about their mothers are in the stage of birth where, when the birth starts, nature sets the mother and the child into a kind of antagonistic position. When the contractions start, the mother is taking away the comfort of the child, and the fact that the presence of the baby in the mother's body causes her pain, and there is no resolution of that situation until the cervix opens, when it turns into a synergistic situation. So even the recognition that all the anger or negative feelings that we might have about our mothers are coming from situations where she had any choice, you know, how she would act, and that they are just a spin-off of a life-giving situation. So that insight itself can really make a difference. Because usually when people have negative feelings toward their mothers, they think that it is because the behavior of the mother in situations where she had some choice. But then, of course, the real resolution of that problem involves a direct reliving of that situation. And that can really dramatically change. We have seen relationship with the mothers really dramatically transformed by that.
That's great. That's really illuminating. And how might there might be even transpersonal layers as well. So could you give an example of how some transpersonal layers could be filtering into that through the birth process and then into our personal biography?
Well, again, you might read about you know, the importance of past life experiences or the importance of certain elements from the archetypal domain, but it will be sort of intellectually interesting, but it will not be really transforming. Whereas I've seen a number of occasions that the final resolution of an emotional problem or psychosomatic or even interpersonal problem occurred in connection with a real experiential reliving of past life memories. Or, you know, we have seen situations where major changes happen after emergence of a negative energy that seems to be personified, kind of has demonic qualities, when the session really looks almost like an exorcism. And that can be, you know, that can be major changes, but it has to be done experientially. It's important to express the emotions. It's important to express the pent-up physical energies which are associated with that kind of archetype. Mm-hmm. And if it's done that way, then it can really make a major difference in people's lives.
Mm. How does this connect with the more ancient methods of shamanism to also work with healing and clearing psychological or physical disease or challenges?
Well, of course, there's a major connection, you know, between my life and shamanism, because many, many shamans use psychedelic substances. And as I mentioned before, that experience with LSD made major, major changes in my life. And after I had the experience, I really apologized to shamans that I sort of bought the kind of image of shamanism, you know, that was presented at the university, that these are sort of primitive superstitions, magical thinking, you know, primary process, and kind of a dismissal, and the idea that we have truly scientific ways of changing people, like behaviorism or psychoanalysis. But if you have an experience of ayahuasca, for example, with a Peruvian shaman, you know, the methods that we are using, you know, are not very impressive. I mean,
and there,
so they might be, you know, they might be illiterate, but they certainly have an understanding of consciousness and of the psyche that goes way beyond anything that you find today in the universities,
mm-hmm.
because they have these powerful tools that, you know, take them very, very deep into the psyche.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of shamans also are working with song, with sound, with shaking, rattling. There's the moving the energies of the body is also very important as well.
There's certainly, you know, a very strong shamanic element in the holotropic breathwork. And in many ways, it can look like a rite of passage also. So there is there's much more connection with some of these native healing procedures, or ancient healing procedures than with modern psychiatry. Mm-hmm. And I think modern psychiatry is really moving very rapidly in the wrong direction, where will be limiting our interventions to suppression of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, psychiatry historically is a subspecialty of medicine. And in medicine, this would be a very, very poor strategy to be satisfied with suppressing symptoms. For example, having a patient brought into the hospital who has high fever, and we would put him or her on ice and be very, very satisfied that we cannot detect any more elevated temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to, you know, in medicine, you use symptomatic treatment in two situations only, when you are dealing with something where you don't know the any kind of more effective etiologically oriented therapy, or if you use etiologically oriented therapy, and you, in addition, you want to make the patient more comfortable, you combine the causal treatment with symptomatic relief. But, you know, to limit the interventions just to suppression of symptoms is simply not a very impressive strategy.
I think this might be a good time to share a little bit about the concept of the inner healer, and that oftentimes what appear to be symptoms in this reorientation are actually signs of the healing process unfolding.
Well, I think that was you know, great revelation for me, to discover that the psyche has a self-healing potential in the same way in which the body can heal itself. If you look at the world of psychotherapy, there's just any number of schools, and there's absolutely no agreement about some most fundamental issues. For example, what are the major motivating forces? Is it sex, the way Freud saw it? Is it a feeling of inferiority that we are trying to overcompensate, the way Adler saw it? Is this that we don't have fully satisfying sexual life and the libido is kind of jamming and creating character armor, the way Wilhelm Reich saw it? Or is it, you know, cultural elements, as Karen Horney saw it, and so on? And then there's also no unanimity in terms of how to work with the patients, particularly if you use interpretations. The same issue would be interpreted in very different ways depending on the school. There's no, you know, there's no research showing any kind of significant difference in the therapeutic results between schools. Actually, the exact opposite. The differences are inside of the school, that each school has better therapists and not so good therapists. And the results very likely have nothing to do with what the therapists think they are doing. But there are more elements, it's very, very difficult to put your finger on, like the quality of the human encounter between the therapist and the patient, or the feeling of the patient that he or she is unconditionally accepted by another human being, very likely for the first time in their lives because they didn't get it in their family, or that it is the interpersonal interaction that provides a corrective experience, that it breaks certain repetitive patterns. This has been called Jean Valjean phenomenon. So the work with holotropic states brings a very, very radical, very powerful alternative, that you basically create a supportive environment and you give the client a tool to change consciousness and create a situation where you mobilize something like an inner radar that detects what are the contents in the unconscious that have very strong emotional charge and that are also in the right kind of position to the threshold of consciousness, that they are ready to emerge for processing on that particular day. And this healing intelligence then determines the order in which different unconscious materials will emerge into consciousness. And we have to become kind of intelligent co-adventurers, as Jung call it. We are not the doers. We are not the fixers. You know, people who have all the answers in the kind of training that we have received. And actually, we have to adjust our behavior so that it's synergistic with this the inner healing process.
Beautiful. Well, let's love to share, just explore a little bit about how to explore these realms safely. It's something that I think a lot of people who might have been intrigued with psychedelics, for instance, there was a backlash in the 60s and 70s, and that kind of created a lot of fear around non-ordinary states. But I'd love for you to share a little bit more about what you've learned about how to really create a maximally safe way to navigate these realms.
Well, I think the most important issue here is that that psychedelics are basically tools, and what's going to happen will depend on the human use of these tools. I remember a conference in which Humphrey Osmond addressed the question, is something like LSD a panacea or is it a devil's drug, And then he gave an example using a knife. Is the knife something that's very dangerous or is it a useful tool? And imagine that you would have a discussion where the members in the discussion would be a chief of the New York police who would be basically having in mind the murders that are committed in back lanes of New York City, and the other person is a Surgeon General who says, well, when you have the right training, you can really do interesting things with a knife. And you would have a housewife who thinks about the knife as a tool when she is cooking, cutting vegetable or salami. And there's an artist who thinks about it as a tool that he uses in creating wooden sculptures. It would be clear that we are not talking about the knife itself, but about, different ways it is used. So the result of psychedelics depends on what we call set and setting. Who gives it to whom, under what circumstances, for what purpose. So you have a very different situation if you have a person who comes to a party in Berkeley and there is a fruit punch and a joker throws in a handful of sugar cubes, laced with LSD, and people think they are drinking punch and they get a decent dose of LSD, not knowing what is happening. Or some of the experiments which were done in the military, when they want to find out how it would influence people's performance, or giving it to people, without their permission, without their knowledge, in a coke. There was that situation where this happened in a meeting, and the person jumped out of the window. There were situations where the CIA used LSD in the underground in San Francisco, giving it to prostitutes and watching the behavior of the clients through one-way mirrors and so on. It was considered to be a chemical weapon. It was considered to be a tool of compromising foreign diplomats. And the interest was, in many different militaries. It was not just the United States. So I have tremendous awe and respect to what psychedelics can do, on both sides. It can really destroy people emotionally, or it can create a tremendous positive transformation and healing that cannot be really achieved by any other methods that we have. But you have to know what you're doing, and you have to do it under the right kind of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it's helpful to have a map of the potential territory that you can cover as well, so people can not feel disoriented or fearful if they hit particular terrain that they may not otherwise understand.
I have gotten really a lot of feedback from people, thanking me that I created the map that they can use as a guide, or even that throws light on experiences that they already had and were confused about and had difficulties to integrate. So that to have, you know, to have the map of the territory certainly helps, but the setting is really crucial. It's critical.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, let's talk a little bit. I mean, so you talked more about psychedelics and a little bit about breath work. I think that it's probably good to give people a sense for the spectrum of tools available for the psychonaut. So if we're talking about discovering the way of the psychonaut, some folks are going to be curious enough to go to the Amazon to experience ayahuasca, and some folks are more interested in non-substance related ways to explore the same same terrain. So, I'd love for you to share just about some of the methods and what you've seen as most effective.
Well, I would really start with spiritual practices. I mean, if you are involved in some really rigorous spiritual practice, this can lead to a major opening, and these methods are designed actually to induce holotropic experiences. And you know, ideally, they would be sort of a reasonable intensity, so that you could handle it in the context of meditation and sesshin and so on, spiritual retreat. So this is where you would have to start, and then going to the work with experiential methods without psychedelics, and there would again be a whole hierarchy. You know, for example, people who would do Gestalt might be afraid of doing a holotropic breathwork session, and people who are very comfortable with holotropic breathwork would be very afraid of psychedelics. And then within psychedelics themselves, there are tools which are much safer, less problematic. For example, MDMA, that now is being introduced into the treatment of PTSD, is very, very problematic physiologically. You have to really be careful about the dosage and so on. But very few people would have bad trips. It's a very, very kind of benign substance that actually, before it was put on Schedule 1, it saved many, many marriages, many relationships. So it was a very, very useful tool for couples therapy and so on. So, a less demanding situation with MDMA. That something a little more powerful would be mushrooms, psilocybin, and so on, and then going to LSD, mescaline, and so on. And with something like methoxy-DMT, which is the substance that is contained in the parotid glands of toad. That can really go through all the levels and create within seconds, it can create a very powerful, overwhelming experience.
Great. Well, let's go into some other terrain here. So I'd love to just share about some other shamanic work as well, and besides the psychedelic work, and how some journey work can also be part of the way of the psychonaut, where you consciously use drumming and trance-inducing methods to go in.
But this is a very interesting book by Michael Harner, very, very dear and close friend, an anthropologist who also experienced shamanic initiation in the Amazon when he was working with the Jivaro Indians. And he published a book. His last book is called Cave and Cosmos. I think it was with 1,500 Westerners using shamanic techniques, primarily the acoustic drumming, or drumming and rattling. And the experiences are very, very similar, actually, to what we see in holotropic breathwork. I was surprised that the experiences actually went beyond the kind of shamanic cartography, you know, the experiences which are described in the history of shamanism. And the spectrum of the experience was vastly, vastly expanded. I was quite, quite impressed by that. It's actually related to another very fascinating phenomenon, which is that the same happens with psychedelics, the same happens with the holotropic breathwork, that somehow you can have experiences that are part of, let's say, mythology of cultures that are not your own. See, I had experiences of Australian Aborigine mythology or African mythology, and, you know, Buddhist and Hindu and Shinto and so on. So this has to be a new phenomenon, you know. Otherwise, we would not have distinct mythologies. I mean, if, for example, Tibetans, who certainly had very powerful tools of expanding consciousness, they would have to go repeatedly into their own iconography, you know, encountering the kind of deities that are portrayed in Tibetan art. So this seems to be a new phenomenon, that the collective unconscious is opening widely and becomes available to people from different cultures. And it seems to be happening parallel to a similar process which is happening on the surface of the planet. For example, you know, Tibet until the 1950s was really a closed society. There were just a few people like Lama Govinda or Alexander Neil that were cultural brokers, but Tibet was really isolated. And till the 15th century, Europeans didn't know anything about the New World and vice versa. And now everything is interconnected. You know, radio, television, and of course the last straw being internet. We have now recordings of the spiritual music from any culture in the world, and the spiritual scriptures have been translated, and you know, Tibetans are now all over the world teaching, and the same the Sufis and so on. So I think we are moving to global civilization. It's very interesting that this process is happening, you know, on the surface as well as in the depths of the collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about your work, Stan, is it really also illuminates not just some of our personal challenges and the deeper layers of that, but how that impacts the collective, such as the roots of authoritarianism and ways that, you know, we've gotten real distortions in our society. So I'd love for you to maybe just touch on how this map of the psyche and exploring these realms actually helps us understand collective phenomena better as well.
Well, I have been giving a talk which is written also about the subject, Roots of Violence and Greed, you know, to really, really dangerous forces in the human psyche. We see the effects on it all through history. You know, the history is primarily the history of violence and greed. Those are the most obvious features there. And we really don't have any good explanation for the specifically human aggression. You know, the usual explanation is that we come from the animal kingdom, and that is, you know, the extension of the aggression that we see in the animal kingdom. But Eric Fromm wrote a book called Anatomy of Destructivity, where he shows that the human aggression is actually much worse than what you find in nature. You know, there's no Buchenwald and Auschwitz, so this, you know, totally unnecessary aggression that humans are showing. You know, the animals would use aggression for obtaining food or sexual competition or defending the territory, but you don't see anything comparable to what has been happening to the human species. And neither the biological theories nor current psychiatry can explain that. You know, we have very, very meek model that uses things like nursing and toilet training and family dynamics and so on. It's nowhere close to explaining something like what was happening, what was happening in Nazi Germany or in communist Russia or what happened in Tibet and so on. So when you work with non-ordinary states, you find out that there's a powerful, powerful emotional charge, aggressive charge, that's associated with the trauma of birth. So those hours, you know, spent in the birth canal in a potentially life-threatening situation, the inability to breathe, inability to run away from the situation, inability to fight back, that creates enormous arsenal of aggression. And there are even deeper sources of aggression, which are archetypal. You know, there are, it can be coming from the karmic reservoir. It can be coming from phylogenetic imprints of some kind. There are also deities specifically related to aggression. And there are kind of grand archetypal themes like apocalypse or Ragnarok, the you know, the twilight of the gods, and so on. So the roots in roots of aggression in the human psyche are much, much deeper than current psychiatry even imagined. And it can be transformed, but again, you need powerful tools to reach the perinatal level and to reach the roots of aggression on the transpersonal level.
Fascinating. Well, I love the implications of this work, and I got to say, personally, it's been transformational in my life. I mean, it's been the most transformational, mind-opening, soul-expanding work I've ever done. To do the holotropic breathwork training with you, and to facilitate that for many years. So let's transition now, and I want to talk about your upcoming program because first of all, we're so excited about it. It's called The Way of the Psychonaut, an advanced program for exploring transpersonal realms. This is the first time that Stan has ever offered something of this caliber and depth in an online environment to really open it to people around the world, and I know it's going to be an amazing training. So it's you can find it at grofadvanced.com. That's grofadvanced.com. And it's going to be a 24-week program with 16 different modules interspersed with live Q&A. And this is going to allow Stan to get across a very deep body of work, and you really get a broad spectrum of insight from the personal to the transpersonal to the collective to all the different levels of how to navigate these realms, drawing upon really 50 years of advanced research and exploration. So it's going to be a course that runs on Tuesdays at noon Pacific. It's going to start on December 13th and run for 24 weeks. And so, Stan, I'd love for you to just share a little bit about this program and maybe, you know, just what people can expect as a result of going through it with you.
Well, you know, I've been lecturing about different subjects for decades now. And much of it was really oriented towards information, you know, people who have interest and curiosity about this subject and so on. This is the first program where what I have in mind is to provide information for people who really are involved in some deep and systematic self-exploration. So I was actually looking at my own history, you know, the kinds of things that I found myself useful in my own personal quest, and also information that I found useful and important working with others. So there is a much more of a kind of practical orientation in this program.
If you could just give us a little bit of a survey of the modules. I know we don't have time to go into each one of them. You can find all the details at grofadvanced.com, but maybe just give a feeling for the terrain you're going to be covering.
Well, you know, a part of it is the mapping of the territory, but important part of it is to also deal with phenomena that are associated with it. For example, how do you create a safe environment, safe situation for people? How you can handle certain challenging situations or certain complications that might develop, or information about some very important issues related to the quest, such as synchronicity, you know, where a lot of people can really get into trouble when the world of synchronicity start opening for them, because it just violates the kind of a logical structure that we like to have in the world, and it's taking us into the world that's very magical and can be interpreted in a positive way. You know, that one has a very special place in the universe and is sort of guided, or they can start sort of closing in and be interpreted, you know, as a danger that is coming. And as far as the synchronicities themselves are concerned, people who consult a psychiatrist, they get the diagnosis of delusion of reference, because, you know, in current psychiatry, you don't have that concept of synchronicity as a very real phenomenon, so that anybody who takes the pain to check the information that the patient is reporting, we'll find out that this is way beyond any reasonable probability what's happening to them. It's something that was discovered by Jung, and he took 20 years of collecting information before he dared to present it to the professional community, because he knew that thinking in terms of linear causality is basically a cornerstone of materialistic science. So those are, you know, those are different things that might be extremely useful and important for people who get involved in self-exploration.
Hmm. I'll just read a few of the module titles as well to give a sense. There's a module on history of psychonautics. There's one on cartography of the psyche, in-depth psychology, exploring postnatal biography and the individual unconscious, basic perinatal matrices, visionary journey into the deep recesses of the human psyche, transpersonal experiences and their importance for self-discovery, spiritual opening and healing. So it's really, in many ways, it's taking, as Stan said, it's a body of work that's been developed through rigorous research and a lot of synthesis from world traditions, and making it available into a program that guides you in your journey of deepening, awakening, healing and transformation. That could be if you're, you know, whatever the powerful method of explorations you are using, this is really going to help you navigate these realms in a way that is illuminating and awakening and healing, and also very safe, and helps you integrate it over time. I think that one of the things that I also really appreciate with you, Stan, is that you've put a very strong focus on the integration process. So it's not just having the experience, but it's how do we integrate that into our daily lives as well.
I have also looked, Stephen, to something that was very important for me, which was somehow the synthesis or the integration of the scientific worldview with the best of spirituality. You know, I've been involved very much in the development of transpersonal psychology and have been on the defensive, you know, because transpersonal psychology has been accused of being flaky and irrational and unscientific. So I really was following the development of the new paradigm, beginning from Fritjof Capra's The Tao of Physics and ending up with Irvin Laszlo, his last book, which is called this scientific worldview of the 21st century. And so people who need some kind of a justification, you know, professional justification or personal for what they are doing, I think the development in new paradigm science are extremely useful for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no difficulty of reconciling the spirituality, spiritual quest, mystical experiences with the new science. It just seems to be incompatible when you think that science is the Cartesian, Newtonian, 17th century thinking.
Fantastic. Well, again, I encourage you folks to go to grofadvance.com. A bit more about this. So we're going to have 16 90-minute class sessions, and these are really teaching sessions with Stan, where he's going to give you the download of all of the key insights and elements. And then we'll have 8 sessions where you can do the live interactive Q&A calls with Stan. And so this is like between every 2 of the 16 modules. And so we'll also have weekly exercises and practices for inquiry. We're going to recommend that people actually engage in some form of deep exploratory work, whether that's holotropic breathwork or shamanism or something that really brings it alive in a personal way. We get recordings of every class session. You also get PDF transcripts. PDF transcripts are really valuable because you get word for word exactly what was taught every time. And if that's not enough, then we've got also some amazing bonuses. First of all, we have a book that's called Healing Our Deepest Wounds, The Holotropic Paradigm Shift. That's by Stan. We also have a dialogue between Jeremy Yeust and Jim Morningstar on therapeutic breathwork, the new paradigm. And this gets at some of what we were talking about with holotropic breathwork and how breath and music and body work can help to release some of the long-held traumas and tensions and issues in the body. We also have a number of great video bonuses too. There's these, a lot of these come from Argentina, and they've been seen in Spanish but never released in English before in the English-speaking world. So there's 3 different videos, one of which is a bonus when you sign up today. So the first 2 are a spiritual emergency and a psycho-spiritual perspective on the global crisis. These are close to an hour videos that really take you deeper into this. You have a video transmission from Stan on these areas. And the 3rd one, which is available only when you sign up today, is on the cosmic game. I think one of the most exciting and fascinating areas for insight that emerges from this non-ordinary state work is insight into the very nature of reality and the cosmos. And Stan is brilliant at exposing that. We want to share a little bit about the kind of things that you cover on the cosmic game, Stan?
Well, this is a book where I try to summarize some of the most far-out insights that people had, which were sort of related to ontological, cosmological issues, where people were in the sessions asking the question, is it possible that this universe has just created itself? Or does it have a master blueprint created by superior cosmic intelligence? Is there God? If there is God, what is my relationship to God? Have we lived before? Why is evil in the world? And so on. So those are the most advanced insights that people have when they are asking some really fundamental questions about existence itself.
Fantastic. Well, and that's available.
How people answer these questions for themselves.
Yeah, so that's the special bonus that you get when you sign up today. We always like to do that as a special incentive to go to the page at grofadvance.com. Give it a read and tune in, and if you're feeling the call to this very deep, very, very profound exploration, then you get an extra bonus for signing up today. So again, you can find all the details at grofadvance.com. We've kept the price very accessible. It's just $219 a month for the 6 months, or you save about 10% when you pay in full. It's $1,197 for the full payment. So what I can say on a personal level is that Stan has pioneered some of the most advanced terrain for consciousness on the planet. He's brought the rigor of a scientist, the heart of a healer, and the real brilliance of a great intellect to help understand these realms, these further reaches of human potential. So I know that my life has been totally enriched and blessed by spending deep time for many, dozens of weeks with Stan. And I know that if you take this 24-week journey with him, it's going to be a truly mind, heart, and soul expanded adventure for you, and one that will change your life for the better. So I highly encourage it. It's going to be a beautiful group. We had 500 people in his introductory program on the future of psychology. This is going to be somewhat smaller, but like a very committed global group, and you're really going to make some beautiful allies as well. So you can find all the details at grofadvanced.com. Also read many testimonials from people who have been through his programs before, and really you're warmly invited to this adventure. So Stan, thank you so much for this hour. It's been illuminating as always, and we're super excited by your upcoming six-month program. So anything just on your heart you want to say to those who are considering joining you for the next stage of the journey?
Well, like Jung, I believe that to have a full life, it's not enough to be oriented toward activity in the external world, that you have to spend some time with deep self-exploration and transformation, and then live your life so that it becomes a synthesis of what you see and experience and do on the outside and what you discover in the inner world, where you sort of tap the wisdom of what Jung called the self, the higher being, sort of source of being that we have. So I believe that this would transform people's lives, individually, and if it could be done on a larger scale, that it could really create a different world. The planet doesn't have any other problems that people, and I really believe that we cannot change the situation that we are facing now, the global crisis, without some significant inner transformation that would almost, create a different species, would sort of raise us to a whole other level of evolution.
Amen to that. Well, we are ready for it, and thank you for helping to light the way forward.
I have seen this in many individual people. Now, whether this is possible on a large scale and whether we have enough time, it's a different question. But I believe that it's one of the few hopeful things that we have in this present situation, the possibility to really change our people, changing themselves.
Mm. Well, thank you, Stan, for that closing note of wisdom there and for the time together and for this upcoming program. We are really blessed to have you illuminating the way of the psychonaut as a pathway to a healed and more awake and enlightened future on planet Earth.
Thank you, Stephen, for everything you have been doing, you and your group, your co-workers. And it's always a pleasure to have the discussion and interview with somebody who really knows the field.
Thank you, Stan. So thank you all for joining, and look forward to having as many of you as are feeling the call in the upcoming Way of the Psychonaut at grofadvanced.com. So thanks all, and have a beautiful next step on your journey.